At the Movies with CJ Johnson.
CJ, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Philip.
All right, post-Oscars, we'll get to the wrap-up shortly. And we're also reviewing Red Sparrow.
Mm.
What's this about?
Red Sparrow is a new film starring Jennifer Lawrence, who is the queen of Hollywood. She's one of the few A-list, well, there's a lot of A-list stars left, but she's one of the few stars left who commands, you know, awesome fees and big control and power. Yeah. She basically is one of the few stars left who sets their own agenda. You know, she creates go projects worth a lot of money. She is able to control who's involved in them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's a very powerful young woman in these waning days of the star system. Mm-hmm. And she deserves it. She is a true movie star. She's a very, very good actor, and she has clout for many reasons. She, you know, like a lot of young actors these days, much more so than some of their forebears, she's managed to run a career on two paths simultaneously. So she does artsy-fartsy projects that she wants to do, such as Mother from last year, which nobody went and saw, but people like me loved, you know, artsy-fartsy critics like me. And then she's also done and dusted, but I don't know how old she is. I think she's still in her 20s, but she's done and dusted with the Hunger Games series. So she's already got a franchise and therefore the love and loyalty of, you know, billions, literally billions of young women worldwide. Mm. So she's got that audience and her arts audience, and what more could you want? So she really has control. How she is using that control is causing a few of us who follow such things to raise our eyebrows, because Mother, you know, was a very good film, but it was a film in which she played a woman who was oppressed by
this. It was a pretty weird movie.
It was a very weird movie, and I don't recommend it for everyone.
No.
And she played a woman who was, I mean, it was her film. She was the lead, but she was oppressed by a dominant husband and essentially beaten down by him, not physically, but in many, many other ways, psychological certainly. Mm. And it was what you wanted her to come after, you know, what you wanted her to follow that up with was something else where she was strong. You know, she plays a very strong character in the Hunger Games films. She has played strong characters in other films. But what she's followed it up with, this film Red Sparrow, is so the opposite that it's caused myself and a number of other critics to hang our heads in our hands and wonder why she's making these choices. So what it is, on the surface, it is a very classy, old school, throwback espionage thriller like we used to get in the 70s and also for a while in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. It is mainly set in the Eastern Bloc. It's mainly set in Russia and Hungary, and she plays a Russian, and most of the characters in the film are Russian. And at its outset, as I say, it's got a very classy veneer. It's got a huge, very deep bench of A-list actors, and I'll get to some of them, but really good actors. It's got beautiful production design. It's obviously very expensive, beautifully shot, and it feels like it was shot in authentic locations. It feels like it was, if not shot in Russia, then certainly all over the Eastern Europe to simulate Russia. It looks really good. And the first 15 minutes or so, which is all a pre-credit sequence, you're like, wow, this is going to be great. I'm so excited. This is an adult, old school espionage thriller and everyone looks really good. Mm-hmm. And then the first major sort of instigating incident happens and you think, oh no, because what happens is she plays a ballerina. There's no spoilers. This is all in the first 15 minutes. She plays a ballerina in the Bolshoi Ballet. Mm-hmm. And she breaks her leg on stage and she can no longer be a ballerina. So her uncle, who's connected, suggests that she could have an alternative career in the Secret Service, but she has to go to this particular school, which is the Sparrow School. Now, supposedly, this book, the book on which this movie is based, was written by an ex-CIA guy, I think, or no. At least the CIA has praised the book. Supposedly, the book gets a lot of its facts right, and supposedly this school exists and these women exist. They're called Sparrows, or the Russian equivalent, and this is where it gets problematic. They are trained in the art of seduction and sex in the aid of espionage for the mother country.
Well, that's what they've always been trained to do, haven't they?
Yeah. Hmm. So Jennifer Lawrence's character goes to sex school.
Right.
And one of the things at sex school, like Mata Hari school, but really sex school, one of the skills she has to learn while she's there is not just how to seduce men and have sex with them with no feeling, but also how to be sexually assaulted by them, or to use another word, to be raped.
Mm-hmm.
So it's problematic. It feels like it feels so spectacularly mistimed, considering the conversation that is going on right now about the portrayal of women in big, expensive Hollywood films.
Yeah.
And particularly for this star, because she does have the most power of any woman in Hollywood, for her to be in this film where at minute 16 or minute 17, she is unfortunately being raped, sexually assaulted, and she is expected to learn from it. It's really difficult to continue on with because this is what we're meant to buy. Now, I suppose the film could be saying this happens in Russia and shouldn't we all be tsk-tsking? But the film doesn't really carry that weight. It doesn't carry that sort of intellectual thrust through. So she survives this school and she gets out in the world and she pursues her mission. And never feels like we are learning something. Instead, she starts to use these arts that she's learned, and it is, as it prescribes to be, a relatively adult, relatively sophisticated, and certainly lots of twisty, twisty, turny plot thriller. But it's predicated on this assumption that we have to buy into this idea of a spy who's schooled not in the use of, you know, guns or lockpicking or anything, though supposedly she gets all that training as well, but in the art of sex. Sex is a weapon. And that is just tough, I think. It just misses its moment.
All right. This is a little from Red Sparrow.
Welcome home. How are you?
Have a seat.
You used to love this place when you were little. You were always so serious with your big grown-up eyes and your child's face.
What do you want, Uncle?
There is a traitor hiding place in the government, probably in one of the intelligence agencies. A mole. His last known contact is an American now in Budapest. What I want from you is to get close to him and establish trust. And then you bring me the name of the mole. You follow the trail wherever it leads you. You sacrifice whatever needs to be sacrificed. You understand?
And what reward will they give you? A promotion?
Mm-hmm. So as you can hear, everyone talks in Russian accents, which doesn't help things, because as you can hear, they talk slower and more mumbly in their Russian accents. There was a film last year called Atomic Blonde.
Which I saw, which I thought was terrific. Very classy film.
It was terrific. It had Charlize Theron. This film thinks it's classier because of its sheen, but it's not.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Instead of action sequences, it has torture sequences. It's really grim.
Okay. Stars?
Ooh. Two.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I should just quickly mention the cast, because I said Jeremy Irons, Charlotte Rampling, Cyrian Hines, Jolie Richardson, Douglas Hodge, Matthias Schoenherz, and Jennifer Lawrence. Cool. It's a good cast, but they're all speaking in these Russian accents. It's not very good.
All right, just before you go, CJ, to the Oscars wrap-up, of course, been and gone. Of course, the Oscars, the best film Shape of Water, and best actor Gary Oldman, best actress Frances McDormand. The Shape of Water wasn't really a surprise, was it? I know you didn't like it much. I saw it. I had a better view of it than you did. But
did you think it should win? It wasn't a surprise. It was the odds-on favorite. I was hoping for a sneaky win by something else, which you can get to. But did you think it should win Best Picture?
Well, it was certainly brilliantly made, and the production design was extraordinary. It looks terrific.
It does look terrific, and there's no doubt that
it doesn't plumb any great emotional or other depths, but. It did look terrific.
No pun intended. Well, Guillermo del Toro, who also won Best Director, he knows how to make a movie. That's the thing. It is seamless and beautifully made. But all the stuff about, I guess, basically it's about a woman who falls in love with an Aquaman, a creature modeled on the creature from the Black Lagoon from the 50s. And along with that, if that had been it and they'd allowed the metaphor to stand as is, it would be one thing. But then the movie hammers the metaphor home by putting in these very awkward subplots about homophobia and racism that really
Yeah, I just saw it as a movie about, you know, it was a movie about the benefits of inclusion and, you know, outsiders and all of that. That's what I thought it was.
It's certainly all of that. You said the funniest thing to me about this movie, which was a few weeks ago, before you went and saw it, you said to me something along the lines of, I think I need to probably go see that movie about the woman who falls in love with the jellyfish.
That's right.
Which I loved.
Gary Oldman for Best Actor. Well, there's no real surprises there, it was a terrific performance. But then again, you know, was it ever going to be anything but?
I think he deserved it. Yeah. I think I'll tell you why. Because you could fail. They could put all that makeup on you and the fat suit and all of that, and you could not do it very well.
Yeah.
And there's actually a lot of movies around where people don't do it very well. Mm.
Why didn't Dunkirk win anything? I think it won something for sound editing, and that was it.
It won both sound ones, best sound editing and best sound mixing, but it also won, and I'm very pleased about this, it won best editing. And the reason I'm pleased about that is because a couple of other films, such as Baby Driver, had more flashy editing. Baby Driver, you know, every 10 minutes was a 5-minute car chase. And car chases have often won movies editing awards because they're hard to edit. But Dunkirk, its editing was much more monumental, much more holistic, because it was three stories across three different time periods all told simultaneously in one movie. So that was much more cerebral, intelligent editing, and it was recognized as such. And that I really appreciate. Mm.
And Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I thought that film was a complete mess. But
me too.
Anyway, you and I are of one mind about this, although Frances McDormand was great. But then again, she plays the role that Frances McDormand always plays.
And also, as I heard another critic say on a podcast over this last week, and I wholeheartedly agree with, it was a critic who was an actor, nothing is easier to play than anger.
Hmm.
And all she does in that film, I would suggest, is play anger.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the people she was up against, they had a lot more colors. I mean, when I think about it, Margot Robbie in I, Tonya had more colors in her
character. Well, I, Tonya was an outstanding film and deserved much, much more than it received, quite frankly.
But it did get an Oscar. It got an Oscar for Allison Janney.
That's true, which as Best Supporting Actress, and fair enough too, she was amazing in it.
Yeah. I wanted Get Out to win Best Film at the end of the day, even though I thought Phantom Thread and Call Me By Your Name were greater movies. Get Out, I think, is the film that's going to be the most important movie of this year for many reasons. It'll have long tail because of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is such an interesting, intelligent, fantastic film.
I don't think it's on screens anymore, actually, Round, is it?
No, I think it's available now to stream. So I think you can probably, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Get Out, I think you can get it on VOD now. So get it, watch it tonight. It's just terrific. And it did win Best Original Screenplay, which I'm very happy about for this guy, Jordan Peele.
Yes, okay. And the Me Too theme was running strongly through the ceremony. I mean, Frances McDormand got plaudits for her speech, which was powerful.
Now, do you want to know those last two words? Do you know what those mean?
Inclusion writer, yes, that's right.
She said two words, inclusion writer. What that means is she's basically asking people, this ties it all up nicely, people like Jennifer Lawrence, people who have great power, and as I say, very few do. In fact, you know, very few do. But people like Jennifer Lawrence to include in their contracts an inclusion rider. So a rider in their contracts that says that the film must be inclusive. And the way this is being used, well, it's barely being used, but the way Frances McDormand and others would like it to be used in Hollywood would mean, therefore, if you see a street scene in New York, that it should represent how a street scene would actually look. It should include all the races and genders that a street scene would actually look. And that it also reflects inclusive diversity of gender and ethnicity in the crew and in the cast.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a nice thing to hope for.
Indeed. All right, CJ, good stuff. Thank you.
See you next week.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.